Welcome to the Loyal Sons podcast, presented by the boys of Capel Faithful. That's at Capel Faithful on Twitter. Follow us there and follow us here wherever you listen to your podcasts. The Loyal Sons podcast, a safe, sunshiny place for your Pitt Athletics fix. Today is Thursday, September 16th, 2021, week three of the college football season. The sun is shining, the birds are chirping, and the Pittsburgh Panthers are 2-0. Now, the Loyal Sons went on vacation last week to scenic Knoxville, Tennessee, which is why we did not put an episode out last week. However, we're back in the Steel City, and we're ready to talk about our undefeated Pitt Panthers. So why don't we get started? Dylan, how are we feeling about this football team so far?
Tell you what, we're 2-0. We were a little worried about the Knoxville game. Thought that might be one of our letdowns. Now people are calling the Western Michigan game the letdown. But I feel really good. The biggest thing to me is probably just the playmakers showing up on offense. We look like we can just outscore teams at this point. I don't want that to be what we have to do all year, but it's really promising. We're starting to look like a real college football offense, which we hadn't looked like the last few years.
It's funny. On Monday, I got asked by a coworker, was that a big win for Pitt? And instinctively, I said yes, because we're 2-0. We beat an SEC opponent on the road. Who would have thought we'd be doing that? I don't care that it's Tennessee. But at the same time, it is Tennessee, so I don't want to get too sky high and through the roof. But we're 2-0, so I am.
No, I agree. Anytime... And I'm sure at some point we'll talk about UMass, unless we don't, in which case we won't. Right. But, I mean, Tennessee has, like, a bunch of big dudes who run fast, and I feel like that's paramount to putting together a good college football team. And we beat them at football. So that is, I mean, just in that kind of cool.
And they had 82,000 fans there. It was a really good environment. We were there.
We were there, yeah.
And it was really loud. Hostile environment. It says something that team was able to withstand taking a punch in the mouth early and then come back, kind of settle down and really control the rest of the game.
So let's talk about that start. Pitt went down 10-0, what felt like almost instantaneously. Where were your heads at when we started that way? And what do you think of the boys, specifically Kenny Pickett's efforts to turn that around in the second quarter?
Well, we were all looking at each other up in those bleachers, up in the second deck, thinking like, okay, another score and we're out of here.
I was dead inside. Yeah. I was mentally preparing to go start grabbing a couple waters from the concession stand so I could sober up and drive us back to Pittsburgh after the game. Like, yeah. I thought that was the end of the trip. I thought, you know, no one was going to want to hang out anymore.
I was watching from my couch. I had the same feelings. Thankfully, I didn't have an 8-hour drive ahead of me. But I was just sitting there, and I wasn't even mad. I was just so defeated. I'm like, God damn it, I got my hopes up again. Is this really the way it's going to happen? But I quickly realized, you know what, well, we got Kenny Pickett. I'm not out just yet, but I was very, very, very close. Like, one of those Joe Milton passes gets completed. Thank God he has the worst arm I've ever seen in a Power 5 quarterback.
I think my heart about dropped into my stomach when on the deep ball that Marquez Williams broke up, but Milton put it on the money. That was the one pass that he did.
Let me rephrase that. I said the worst arm in the Power 5. Guy can throw it a mile, but he can't hit the broadside.
The worst accuracy, possibly.
Yeah. Important clarification.
Dylan and I watched the complete game yesterday because what else are you going to do on a Monday? And he threw more deep balls. He tested us deep even more than I thought. It felt like he threw a million deep balls their first two possessions while we were at the stadium. He actually threw 2 million deep balls their first two possessions.
Well, it happened so quick. They would overthrow a pass, get back to the line, like do a quick handoff the next play, take another shot, and the guy would be pretty wide open, but he just couldn't connect.
Yeah, I was looking around, and I said to somebody we were with, and I just said, they look lost. Like, Narduzzi did not come in prepared. They look lost in every facet, on special teams, on offense, they went 3-and-out. And then on defense, they were just, the receivers were running right by us.
The biggest thing I thought was, all week Narduzzi talked about the tempo. We have a veteran defense. We have a lot of guys who have played, a lot of really good guys. And we've played UCF before. This isn't a surprise. We know what they're going to do. Well, Josh Heupel was at UCF. We know his scheme. Bring him to Tennessee. We know they're going to snap the ball every 10 seconds. And we still weren't prepared. We were subbing guys on and off, and it just looked like we were hanging on for dear life.
Well, so the one deep ball, the one of like seven deep balls that Milton missed in those first two drives that I think really stuck with everyone was the seam route that they ran with their tight end where he was completely uncovered. That was because Pitt had swapped on seven or eight guys that play, you know, hurried everyone on and off the way that you have to when the offense runs up tempo. Yeah. And it was just a blown assignment. You know, a guy was sprinting onto the field for his, like, you know, for his life. And had no idea where he was. They looked completely disoriented. Thank God Joe Milton almost put it in the stands. Or we would have been down 14-0 in the first 90 seconds of the game.
Yeah, we definitely got lucky. And you know what? Not every college quarterback is as good as ours. Actually, most of them aren't. I'd say none of them are as good as ours.
Wouldn't trade Kenny for anyone.
Doesn't this kind of feel like the week where the national media and the national college football fan base has kind of almost figured out that Kenny Pickett is like a thing? Like I've seen more hype from this week than ever before. And it's almost like it took a come from behind win against an SEC opponent on ESPN for people to be like, oh, this guy, he can sling a ball around a little bit.
Yeah. And you said it was on ESPN, which I think is a big deal. Everyone gets to watch, a lot of eyeballs. You know, it was the noon ESPN game, so a lot of people were probably tuned in. Tennessee is a big-name program. We went down there on the road, and Pickett played. I don't want to say it's the best. I've heard a lot of people say it's the best game he's played at Pitt, and I think you can make the argument, but he's played some pretty good games. But for him to go down there and look pretty flawless for most of the game and make some big plays with his legs, just all around just look like a super senior and look like the best quarterback in the ACC. Yeah, definitely. I think national media is starting to pick up on him a little bit. Something we knew for the last couple of years.
I'll tell you what. We were down 10-0 early in a hostile environment. And once we had those three and outs out of our system, Pickett didn't miss a beat. We had the lead quicker than, I don't even know how long it took. But we were down 10-0. The next thing you know, we have the lead. And if we don't do that, if Pickett's a little bit off, that could get ugly really fast. So he was making all the throws. We got like every third down. They kept showing on the broadcast. Pickett is like 7-for-7 on third downs for like 80 yards. Yeah, so that's what kept us in it.
Receivers making plays too. It was something that we've been so accustomed to, them just dropping balls or catching the ball and immediately falling down. I mean, there was some of that. But a few times our receivers actually caught the ball, ran and made some plays, and it was really refreshing. And honestly, I mean, that is what has made me feel so much better, is those receivers look like actual Division I ACC receivers.
There were a couple of times where Pickett would have a really nice throw in a really tight window, and the receiver would stick their hands out in a tough spot, very contested. They'd make the catch, and they'd juke a guy out and need a couple extra yards. That is something I haven't seen in the last 2 years.
So let's – I think that's
– So we look like a real team.
Yeah.
I see it every other game that happens on Saturdays. I'm like, wow, why doesn't Pitt just do that? Why can't we do that? What's our problem?
Why don't we run the play where everybody gets open? The Ohio State play.
Right. Yeah.
So you guys bring up a really good point. I think the receivers have exceeded our expectations thus far. And we'll talk a little bit more specifically about the Tennessee game. We didn't go get hammered with – you know, 20 of our best friends in Knoxville. I'm sorry, 300 of our best friends in Knoxville for 4 days, you know, to not tell you guys a little bit more about our experience there. But let's talk about the first 2 weeks on a more holistic basis. What are a couple things that you were worried about going into this season that Pitt has exceeded your expectations on?
Well, I think that right there was the biggest one, is the wide receiving core. Everyone said coming to the season that this was the best, you know, wide receivers they've had while Pickett's been there. This is the best wide receiver group they've had in a while. They're deep, they're talented. And for me, it all made sense on paper, but it was like, you need to show me in the game.
We said it going into last year, too. We said these receivers are good and Pickett's good, so why is our offense not going to be really good?
Yeah, so that's the big thing for me is receivers.
Defensive line has been good. Kalijah Kancey is definitely
as advertised.
Yeah,
he's incredible.
If we're voting today, he's all ACC first team.
No,
I I made a point to bring this up if we were able to record last week. It was almost as if he would like run two or three plays on defense, and then they would pull him out and hide him on the sidelines because they didn't want too much tape out there on him. He is such a man among boys, which is weird because he looks like the smallest guy in the box. He is compact. Maybe it's just because he's wearing number 8 and my stupid brain can't compute that large people wear big number, but he's just been phenomenal. He was eating Tennessee alive.
Yeah, there was one play in particular. I know Pitt Football Instagram put it out, but he just beats his guy, blows through a tight end, and grabs the quarterback with his offhand and just completely
throws out the play. Who does that
Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
I don't want to make too many comparisons, but I mean, it's kind of that same mold of just like a quick, smaller, compact D tackle. But yeah, he's legit. He's a potential All-American guy.
He looked good last year. He put it all together this year, and you can tell that in a matter of 2 weeks.
Also, my favorite video from the trip was just Kalijah Kancey just holding a whiteboard that says, walk in your trap, take over your trap. And he's just dancing around the sideline with it.
We like to play a game when we watch Pitt play together, and I encourage you at home to start playing it. It's called Watch Kalijah Kancey on This Play. We've played it like 3 times, and I think he has 3 sacks.
Every time we watch, it's like, oh, he just shed a double team, and he's in the backfield. Even if he doesn't make the play, he just blows up the play. It's actually unreal how often he's just manhandling the guy in front of him.
When he went down, I was so sad. I think we had the lead at that point. It was like 2 or 3 plays after he had the insane play that Dylan just described, and he went down. They were like checking his knee. I was so invested in the game, I couldn't be sad because I'm like, oh my gosh, we got to come out of this game. This is like the worst case scenario for this defense. We got a small little taste of greatness, and now it's been taken away.
I was convinced I was coming out of Nayland in a body bag after that one.
Yeah, well, it was right while we were playing Kalijah Kancey game, and we watched that play, and we were screaming like, oh, he's getting held. He was getting held, and then he was down on the field grabbing his knee, but thank God he's okay.
So we've covered all the sunshine and rainbows, and there is a lot, but, you know, as a Pitt podcast, we need to keep our heads on a swivel. We need to be prepared for what some in the past would have called the inevitable letdown game. What are some things that we have found a little bit troubling for through the first 2 games?
Well, in the Tennessee game, I think a lot of people have talked about this, but there's a lot of missed tackles and obviously the blown coverages. The defense just didn't look super sharp. They made big plays, and I do like that. I forced 3 turnovers, had 5 sacks, the big stop on the goal line. So this defense, obviously very talented, and they'll make big plays. I don't know that they're as solid as last year's unit that wasn't really making any mistakes. But that's a little worrisome to me that, you know, we're just going to get beat by a really good quarterback, something like that.
Our susceptibility to big plays, not just on defense, but in general, is something that already deeply worries me. There was a blocked punt. There was a kick six that was called back. There were about 5 plays in the first 2 drives that could have been 60-yard touchdowns. There was a screen that got housed. There was Joe Milton almost took one in from about 50 out.
Yeah, Brandon Hill didn't run him down. That was 7 or 6 points.
Yeah, so, I mean, a couple of those, we escaped by no merit of our own, you know, penalties or Joe Milton having no concept of, like, depth perception. That is something that needs to be cleaned up. We are going to play Miami. We're going to play Clemson, 2 schools with unbelievable talent in the skilled position, and they could just shred us. If they turn it into a track meet, I don't know if that's something we can do as a team. I don't think we're built for that.
You mentioned the missed tackles. I'm most disappointed in our linebackers. I think the run game would be an easy answer here, but we all kind of didn't have extremely high hopes for that. The linebackers, we brought basically everybody back. I don't know. I expected better. There are so many blown coverages. We get beat on that tight end up the middle seam route play all the time. Missed tackles. They got to clean it up for the veteran group they are.
I have to disagree with you on one part of that. I think Dylan and I each predicted Izzy Abanaconda to get like 12 to 1,500 yards this year. And they keep doing this thing where they put the baby in the game. As you will find out, dear listener, the baby is what we not so affectionately refer to Vincent Davis as, our 170-pound bell cow running back that can't run through an arm tackle and can't fall forward.
He's 170 pounds, but he's wearing a 20-pound weight vest.
Yeah, he's tiny, and, I mean, we've talked about this at length, ad nauseum. I still think there's a role for him. I think if you can get him in space and give him, you know, we look at the Georgia Tech game last year, give him some space, he can make a guy miss or two. But at the end of the day, 19 carries was sickening. And it's just really, and then honestly, Izzy hasn't shown a ton either. I can't act like he looked like Herschel Walker out there, but he looked better than Vinny.
But he was able to ice a game by virtue of breaking
through the line. That's step one. Vincent Davis can't do that half the time.
He was able to ice a game by virtue of beating the first tackler and falling forward when he had a couple guys on him. That got him 3 or 4 yards a carry, and that was all we needed to put Tennessee away. Vincent Davis is not doing that.
I know he got in on the one goal line run, but I think it was in one of the press conferences, Narduzzi said that the coaching staff agreed that Vincent Davis was the short yardage back.
Yeah, it was the post-game press conference.
And I don't know how you come to that conclusion. Pitt's in the shadow of their own goalpost, and they're trying to run the ball to create space. They go under center, back-to-back runs with Vincent Davis. 0 yards, -1 yards. How do you think that would work? What has Vincent Davis showed you all year that leads you to that conclusion? I don't know.
I'm starting to get really concerned about Mark Whipple's inability to learn from mistakes. What do they say? Madness is doing the same thing 1,000 times in a row and expecting a different outcome. It's like, do you remember 2 years ago when Mo French would catch 9 passes at the line of scrimmage again? And the thought was, he's got to break one of them. And he never did. And he had about 90 catches for 800 yards or something ridiculous. Like, he was averaging 8 yards, 7-8 yards a catch, and they just kept doing it because one of these times he's going to bust one. It's the same with trying to run your offense through Vincent Davis, which clearly from the first 2 possessions was the game plan against Tennessee. Right. We came to an SEC school and thought, we're going to power through with Vincent Davis. He's going to take us to victory.
What pisses me off is Narduzzi's stubbornness. After the game, he's like, yep, we knew we were going to wear him down. At the end of the game, we got 2 first downs to milk the clock, and we did it by running the football down their throats. So because of that, he's probably going to try to do the same thing a couple weeks from now. We'll keep trying to do it. Like, yeah, it worked this time, but please, make it easier on us. Don't count on that to be our saving grace.
Yeah, I honestly think what we're going to come to see, and I really hope I'm right on this one, but I think they're going to slowly get Izzy more comfortable. I think they went down to, you know, SEC country, hostile environment. Vinny Davis has played in some big games before. Izzy hasn't. Probably a guy that they rely on to not fumble the ball, not miss pass protection. And hopefully these next couple games against Western Michigan, against New Hampshire, even a little bit so against Georgia Tech, get Izzy a little more comfortable in the scheme of things. And hopefully that carry distribution, I still think Vincent Davis will probably see him get 8 to 10 carries. In games for the rest of the year, but I think we'll start to see a little bit more of Izzy, because I don't think they would have hyped him up so much in camp, and I don't think they would have tried to introduce him in this game if the thought process wasn't to eventually make him the guy. So I do think that will happen eventually, and I hope I'm right on that.
Well, you know, it happened in West Virginia where we knocked off number 2. It happened in South Carolina, and it's happening in Pittsburgh today.
All right, so let's take a little bit of time to tell everyone about our trip to Knoxville. So last week, unreasonably early, like on Wednesday, about 20 of our friends and about 60 total people that we know and are associated with made the drive down to Knoxville, Tennessee. Squid, unfortunately, was not able to make it. He had scheduled his ass injections for that Thursday. You look great. Speedy recovery, buddy. Wish you could have been there. But Why don't we talk a little bit about the sights and sounds in Knoxville, Tennessee?
What a time. Great time. Definitely highlighted by Friday night in Knoxville. I think that's I mean, going to be the clear winner here.
Yeah, so if you aren't big into Pitt Twitter, and I would honestly guess that zero of, like, the 20 people that listen to this aren't huge on Pitt Twitter. So what happened on Friday night is a group of us show up at this bar called Tommy Trent's on Gay Street in Knoxville, which is like right off the edge of campus. And, you know, we're having fun buying $10 buckets of beer, eating some delicious wings made by a gentleman who I do not know, but he looked like he could double as a bowling ball. However, so, you know, we're having fun. We're sitting on the patio.
We were betting on tennis.
Shout out to Medvedev. As the night progresses, we see actually an increase in Pitt fans and more. You know, we text our guys who are Pitt guys to come in, and then, you know, all of a sudden this crowd kind of starts mounting, and this kind of becomes, oh, this is a Pitt bar. So we're hanging out outside, and the...
I attribute the crowd to the picture we tweeted of Elijah Zeiss being at the bar.
Yeah, Elijah Zeiss kind of has that effect on people. He's a true friend to the pod, as you will find out with a potential later secret episode we'll touch on later. So we accumulate a crowd, and all of a sudden, you know, someone gets the idea that we're going to cheer like crazy people anytime a Pitt fan walks down the street. So we're cheering for every Pitt fan that walks by, and we're kind of surprised by how many there were.
A lot of Pitt chants, too.
And then every Pitt fan that walked by, come in the bar. They ain't nothing better to do. They're in Knoxville. We also start booing everyone in creamsicle and white that walks by.
Boom the hell out of them.
We were getting in some faces a little bit. Before I know it, there's 200 to 300 Pitt fans at this bar losing their minds. Like any time someone walks by in blue, we're freaking out. And like I might have heard the PITT chant 100 times.
Easily. Yeah, and it was pouring out onto the street. I walked up the block and like just everyone out into the street wearing Pitt gear. It was really cool. It was really cool to see that many people.
Yeah, I don't know if Knoxville has any open container laws, but they certainly didn't for about 10 hours on Friday afternoon. But it, I don't want to say it got a little bit out of hand, but let's just say at one point, an unborn Tennessee baby got booed.
Yeah. And rightfully so.
But, yeah, that was absolutely a scene. I think it really set the tempo for the weekend. There were a lot of Tennessee fans belly aching about getting booed in their own city.
Yeah, and us drinking all their beer.
We did drink the bar out of beer.
Yeah. Poor bar back was making beer runs just to keep filling up buckets. But yeah, there was a huge crowd on Friday night, and then on Saturday, the contingent of Pitt fans at the tailgate was unreal. I don't know. What the total number would have been, but just based off that picture we took, that was about 150, and that wasn't all the people who were there. I mean, that was a great tailgate. Shout out to Willard Years, if you're listening to this. Shout out to B. Miller, whatever the rest of your handle is, but all the Pitt Twitter people, that was a great time. That was honestly probably one of the coolest things I've experienced as a Pitt fan.
There were thousands of Pitt fans at this stadium, and it honestly looked like if we were at Heinz Field, and you just took the Pitt fans, it would kind of be comparable to what Heinz Field would look like during a Pitt game, which sucks, but it also caused a realization to dawn on me, and that's like Pitt is like an NHL team. They say that an NHL team can sell out its stadium every single night and still basically put up a goose egg in the ratings because any hockey fan in a city is going to the games. I think that it's kind of similar with Pitt that, like, our away games will drum up the same number of Pitt fans as would be at a home fan. It's just, Pitt just has 20 to 40,000 rabid fans, And
yeah, if you're a Pitt fan, you just kind of love Pitt. We don't have a bunch of outsiders coming to the games to watch us play at Western Michigan in September, but there are a lot of... All the Pitt fans who are in Knoxville love Pitt. Like, they weren't just there along for the ride.
We don't have a lot of halfway fans.
Right.
Ride or die.
Yeah, 100%. That's kind of what makes it so great. But definitely being at the tailgate and then being in the stadium, I actually talked to a couple Tennessee fans who were kind of impressed by how many Pitt fans there were just walking around. I don't think they anticipated Pitt traveling that well.
Yeah.
It's not a super easy trip. But what I also said was this was the no-brainer road trip of the year. I'm not going to play in Knoxville again, and the rest of the ACC road trips aren't super exciting venues. So this was the one that made the most sense. But definitely, shout out to Panther Nation, man, making that trip down there.
No four-day trip to the Carrier Dome up to Syracuse in the middle of November?
Not going down to Durham either to watch Duke play.
Yeah, my one-day college visit to Syracuse, New York is the max amount of time I ever want to spend in Syracuse, New York again. So
to get serious for a second, though, Pat Narduzzi mentioned that in his press conference on Monday.
Damn right.
He talked about seeing videos of Pitt fans taking over bars on Friday.
And he came...
He talked about the ACC chance at the end of the game. All the players and coaching staff mentioned that. So, like we said, the home games, they are what they are. But the rabid fans travel and they show out.
He came so unbelievably close to almost naming us specifically in that press conference. He's like, yeah, I saw some videos of some Pitt fans kind of taking over the town. Like, and it was like, oh, we're this close to him almost naming the bar and talking about how we were booing children in their strollers because they were wearing Tennessee t-shirts.
I was hoping he'd at least make a comment about the beer, drinking all the Bud Light, but yeah. We know who he was talking about. Those who were there know. Those who were at Tommy Trent's will never forget that night.
No. So, Dill, what was your general experience with Tennessee fans? Because we had a lot of mixed interactions with the Volunteers.
The young fans either just said F Pitt or I have you guys -3.5. There was really not much in between. And then the older fans ran into a lot of older people. It was like the Southern hospitality / like corny hospitality that's like, welcome to Knoxville. Hope you have a great time. Hope y'all enjoy the food. And I just wanted to be like, no, why don't you just say F Pitt, flick me off, and I'll flick you off, and we go about our days. But no, fans for the most part were solid.
Most of my interactions were like, you Pitt. Oh, just kidding. Y'all have a fun time down here. I got you on -3.
Yeah.
A lot of Tennessee fans bet on Pitt, which went into a much larger picture that they painted this weekend. That program does not like where they are at right now.
No.
They are not happy.
None of them think they're any good. My first Uber driver I ran into or took a ride from immediately started off with, how you guys think the game's going to go? And we just kind of said, we feel pretty good. And he's like, oh, yeah, we'll be lucky to go 6-6. So, yeah. And honestly, from, like, message board stuff, that kind of seemed, if they go 6-6 and are bowl eligible, I think Tennessee fans will consider that a successful season.
Well, they're one game farther away from that goal.
Damn right.
Courtesy of our Pitt Panthers.
Thanks, Knoxville. We won't be back.
We will not be invited back.
I actually had a video sent to me Friday night how they took over Knoxville.
And now it's time for our newest segment, Mad Online, where we scour the deepest corner of the Pitt version of the internet for some of the dumbest and most off-the-wall reactionary comments from Pitt fans about what they see in the program. So we're going to start our first segment with a little read-through of Panther Lair from Saturday, and I think you'll probably be able to tell what part of the game this is from. So, Dylan, why don't you have our reading?
All right, so this is from the Pitt-Tennessee game thread on Panther Lair. Jesus Christ, why does Whipple need to run a wide receiver bubble screen on the first drive every time? It's so obvious. This game is going to be a disaster. Not ideal. And the pitting has begun. This team will never take the next step under Narduzzi. Joke. This is Saturday at 12:06 p.m., all of these.
We're 6 minutes in and Narduzzi has already lost his job.
Out effing standing. Jesus. Fire everyone.
The funny part is, I don't even think we're at the blocked punt yet. This is just all based off of the first three and out.
I actually think you're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are complaining about the guy just missing a block. Did the pit guy see that guy run right past him to the punter? Oh, and there was also, apparently, I wasn't listening to the game, but apparently the announcers said the coaches told them that they saw something and they were going to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, we're back to Coach Whipple. He's going vanilla, doesn't want to tip his hand or playbook to Western Michigan. That's a good one.
All right, that's funny.
Coaching is abysmal. Bubble screens and apparently no vertical passing game. I suspect Whipple will come out and run the ball three times into a pile of volunteers on the next series. I think they might have been right on that one.
They didn't get a first down, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Bringing back Mark Whipple will be what cost Narduzzi his job in the long run and hold us back from 9 wins. I have no idea why Pitt was expecting to win this game. This is going to be a rout, and hopefully Narduzzi and Whipple's last season. There's a high school in Youngstown missing their gym coach.
All right. I think we can end on that one. It seems like Panther Letter was not enjoying the first couple minutes of the game. And honestly, as unreasonable as a lot of that was, I think my brain was in the same place as a lot of those people.
Yeah, I was calling for Narduzzi said, I'm not going to lie, about 4 minutes in. But what do you know? There's 60 minutes of football games.
Pickett was looking that way. Now he's in trouble. Flushed out of the pocket. And Pickett throws back across the middle. And it's a touchdown.
Seat check. It's time for a seat check. A weekly check-in on Pat Narduzzi and usually Mark Whipple's seats. David, let's hear it.
Well, Dylan, the answer right now is cold. Pitt is riding pretty high off of this win against Tennessee. So I'm going to give Narduzzi a nice 40 degrees, down about 10 to 20 from the beginning of the season. He took care of business against Massachusetts. He took care of business in SEC country. I'm pretty happy with what's going on right now. I'm fickle. I'm easy to please. All it takes is one shiny win, and I'm back on your side. Mark Whipple, I have a little surprise for you guys. Last time I said 80 degrees. I'm going to put him around 55 right now. I've actually come into some information that I did not know before that I know now that has changed my perspective on the direction our offense is going in right now. These are Pitt score totals from the last six football games. 41 points, 51 points, 34 points, 17 points, 47, 41. That's just Pitt's score totals. That 17 is, of course, against Clemson. Otherwise, this has been a productive offense, and I don't think any of us really realize that. I mean, I know that we had the uptick at the end of last season, you know, when it stopped mattering, and we took care of business against Florida State and Georgia Tech. But the fact that this has kind of been a continuing trend going into this season, I'm never going to love Whipple. I'm never going to love a guy who makes his quarterback come to the sidelines every play. I'm not going to love a guy whose scripted first three plays of the game are always like
bubble screens
and dives to Vincent Davis. And like, he looks directionless, but I mean,
he's kind of figuring it out. I don't like him, but he's kind of figuring it out.
Yeah.
There's ups and downs, way too many downs, but at the end of the day, puts up points. So
give me a temperature, Squid. Narduzzi and Whipple.
Right now, Narduzzi's chilling. I'll give him 32 degrees, and
he's
I'll
not
tell you
freezing,
what.
But it's not a warm day.
Yeah. Yeah, he's getting down there. Win the next two games, drop a few more degrees, then the big boys come to town. That's when you find out how cold you really are. I'll tell you what, though. About 3 minutes into the game, I think everyone in Panther Nation would say he was about 97 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, it was hot. It was hot.
He didn't get the boys ready to play. This always happens. Same old Pitt.
It was hot up in the second level of the Neyland Stadium where I was sitting. It was very hot.
Narduzzi's seat temperature higher than the actual temperature in Knoxville, Tennessee in September.
Which was hard to do because that was boiling. Thank God the bachelor party next to us had some sunscreen.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I agree.
the first 5 minutes of that game, in my mind, Narduzzi's seat was so hot he was about to get a skin graft on his ass. Like, it was bad.
I'm not going to picture that. Moving on, Dylan, what's your...
Hey, I'll give Narduzzi a 30 degrees. He's chilling, and he can knock it down. As long as they take care of these next two games, start out 4-0, I think that'll put him in a pretty good spot. I said it in our first pod, if they finish around 8-4, I think that buys him some time with the transition period after Kenny. People won't be jumping for joy, but look, we took care of one of the big games we could trip up in early. Whipple, I'm going to agree. I'm going to put him around 50 degrees. I don't think he's at much jeopardy of losing his job. I do think I'm still going to cuss him out across the TV and at the games when he throws those bubble passes and whatnot, but they're putting up points right now. That's all I can really ask for. They look like a real college football team when they pass the ball, so hey, Mark Whipple, just keep putting 40 plus points on the board and you're okay in my book.
How low can you go, Pat? How low can you go?
I like Pickett too.
All right, boys, so now that Pitt is the most undefeated team in the country, which is technically factually correct,
yep.
How does it impact our outlook for the rest of the season?
Well, got a stretch of two games coming up against teams we typically would think we should blow out if we were a normal program, but instead we're going to be worried sick that Pitt will have a letdown game. Then we have Georgia Tech after that. Seeing as we get through those three games, I would hope Pitt would be ranked heading down to Blacksburg to play a potentially ranked Virginia Tech team. And that's when the season really ramps up.
I've got some cold hard facts for you all. I know we all say, oh, this is going to be the Pitt letdown game. We've seen so much in our lifetimes, we just kind of expect one or two of those a year. But under Narduzzi, we really haven't had those games. I know we got taken to overtime by Youngstown State. There have been some ugly wins.
Why don't I believe you?
Well, here are the cold hard facts I was talking about. If I were to ask you how many losses against non-Power 5 teams has Pitt had under Pat Narduzzi, how many would you guess?
I'd guess a couple dozen.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what you're going to say is probably not, but I'd think at least two or three.
The answer is one. And that was on the road at Central Florida, and they were undefeated.
Wow.
So by no means is that a bad loss. We got crushed, but you probably weren't expecting to win that going into it. And that was his only loss against a non-Power 5 team. He's 20-5 as a home favorite, but what scares people, the stat here I have...
Wait. Say that again?
Under Pat Narduzzi, we are 20-5 as a home favorite.
Then why do I only see death and despair when I look at the Pitt Panthers?
Just our lives. We've seen us lose to Youngstown State. We've seen us lose to Akron. It's ugly. But
remember that time we beat Delaware 17-10?
Yeah, it was the most stressful game of my life, and it was against Delaware.
It was 17-14 because we were losing.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Patty to Mac touchdown to put us up late.
Oof.
The last thing I'll say, not all those wins have been pretty. Pat Narduzzi at home against the spread is 8-15-2. So maybe not winning by as much as we should. We might not have the blowout wins that we're expecting. Like a couple years ago, the Ohio Bobcats came to town. One of the most boring games I've seen.
Shut up.
It's 20-10.
Shut up.
We scored a touchdown in the second half.
Shut up.
That's a game where you want Pitt to crush a much, much lesser opponent.
Duquesne took it to the Bobcats this weekend.
Shut the f*** up, dude.
Yeah. Great weekend for Pittsburgh, right? Not so great for some other colleges and universities.
Sorry, David.
So we're coming as 15.5-point favorites against Western Michigan. What do you guys think? Early in the year, this is the game that I thought that we might slip up at, but Western Michigan kind of got boat raced by Michigan. They lost like 47-17, and I don't think Michigan is that great.
David, you know the MAC much better than us, aren't they? Isn't Western Michigan supposed to win the MAC this year?
No. Here's the thing. They are better than you think that they are. I promise you, if you are listening to this, Western Michigan is better than you think that they are. They were runners up in the MAC last year. They lost to a Ball State team that was ranked 22nd in the country. Ball State was pretty good this year. Not good enough to win me any money against Penn State on a bet that I placed about 4 months ago. Way too confident that Ball State was going to march into Happy Valley and win.
Yeah, you told me that that was like the lock of the century.
Yeah. That's why I don't bet a lot. But my point is, this is not a Western Michigan team that is like bottom of the... This is a top three MAC team that returned a lot of super seniors. They have a quarterback in Caleb Ellaby that can low-key sling the ball. And this is a team that's more well-accustomed to track meets. And I think that is why Michigan blew them out, because Michigan's going to put the ball on the ground 50 times a game.
Oh, great. Just like us.
So they were able to take the air out of the ball and kind of death by a thousand cuts. I don't think we should view this as like a potential letdown game. We should view this as a potential like pretty decent team that could give us a game under their own merit.
I'm going to say this after I knock on wood. We're going to walk out of this game with a win, comfortable win, but we're not going to be feeling too good about it. It'll be like a 31-17, but I don't know.
Never looked too dominant.
Never firing all cylinders, a lot of three and outs, miscues, whatever. More of the same, but we'll get the win, survive in advance. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, we're so programmed to thinking that we can't score that many points, but we were just talking about how much they've been scoring the last six or so games. Maybe they hang some points up, but let Western Michigan score a little bit, and then we all panic about the defense.
We all want to be Alabama. We all want to beat every team like 64-0 every week. I mean, I'd love for that to be the case, but against Western Michigan, they're a MAC school. They got some players, some familiar players, a couple pick guys.
Shout out to Theron Coleman and Bryson Garner.
Yeah.
Two pick grads, actually, super seniors at this point.
So they got some guys.
Two local guys, too, Brashear and Central Catholic.
Yeah.
So give us a score.
What did I just say? 31-17. The offense is going to put up points. Defense will be fine.
I think we're going to look good this week. I think we're going to continue to put up points. I think the running game is going to figure it out a little bit, maybe impose our will against a bit of a smaller, less athletic team. I'm going to say 45-17. We're going to put up points. Quarterbacks and receivers will look good. We'll be able to score. We'll be comfortably in the lead the entire game. Maybe let up, you know, a deep ball or two. But I think the Panthers handle this one and get out of there pretty clean.
I'm a little bit less optimistic than you guys, as per usual. Like I said, I don't think this is going to be a close game because Western Michigan is terrible and terrible teams play Pitt close. I think this is going to be a close game because Western Michigan is a better football program than people think. And for that reason, they're going to play Pitt close. Pitt is so multifaceted in the ways that it plays disappointing football. I think this is going to be 41-33.
Oh my God.
I think it's going to be one of those games where we're up like 14-16 for most of the game and they battle back, but they keep responding. They just keep responding to the point where we can never pull away comfortably.
That's what I was going to say. Much like the Tennessee game, couldn't pull away. So I feel like this is going to be a game where Pitt has the lead. We don't put our foots on their throat. We don't run away with it early. I'd love to be sitting there in the third quarter thinking, oh, got this in the bag. But I don't think that's going to be the case. We'll always have those ups and downs, three and outs.
However,
we'll hang around longer than we'd like them to. But we'll walk away with the win.
I am going to throw a caveat on that, though. I think for the first time in their Pitt careers, either Izzy or Kroll breaks 100 yards. So even if it is a closer game, we are going to walk away from it thinking like, oh, they just didn't take that game seriously enough. We're fine. And oh my God, look at this new toy we have.
Yeah, I could see that happen. Or Vincent Davis will run for a 120 and you'll be pissed because that just means more carries for him moving forward.
It's definitely going to happen.
How many touchdowns is Pickett going to have? That's more important, I think. He's got to build his Heisman resume a little.
I think he'll have three, and that brings up an interesting point. I want us to keep track of Kenny Pickett's true stat line. So we need to start keeping track of and counting touchdowns that are that Pickett is cost by his receiving core. We're at two. Taysier Mack dropped one in the end zone at Heinz Field.
Mm-hmm.
And Jared Wayne threw one on a trick play against Tennessee. That should have been a Kenny Pickett touchdown to Lucas Kroll. So Kenny Pickett is at 6 touchdowns and 0 interceptions this year.
I agree.
I think based on my prediction, I got to go with 3. I think we'll punch one in from the 1 on 4th and 1 because we can never punch it in on 1st or 2nd down. And Pickett will throw or run for the other 3.
4 touchdowns for Pickett this week. If history tells me anything, at least one of them will be rushing, probably a QB sneak or a keeper. But 4 touchdowns. Pickett's balling out. He's hitting his groove. People are starting to take notice. I'm ready to see him sling it on Saturday.
I think much like the first 2 games, Kenny Pickett accounts for 2 touchdowns, but his Loyal Sons adjusted touchdown total is 3 or 4.
Yeah, someone will mess it up for him. Or we'll have one of those stumble down at the 1-yard line and a running back punches it in.
Tale as old as time.
Thank you for tuning in to the Loyal Sons podcast. We'll see you this Saturday as Pitt takes on Western Michigan at noon. Remember, the game's not on local television, so you either have to stream it or make it down to the stadium. Come on down to Heinz Field and have a good time. Shout out to our 2,000 followers. That's right, we just hit 2,000 followers on Cable Faithful. Thank you for everybody who supports. Remember, follow us on there, subscribe to us here, and we'll see you on Saturday. Hail, Loyal Sons of Pittsburgh.
Hey, Dog Soldier. Give me a story. Elijah's nice Dog Soldier. Give me a story about when you talk shit at Pitt.
Yeah, I mean, most people know me. I'm a very quiet guy, right? So, I didn't talk all that much, but there was one time that I talked shit. It was the only time in pretty much my whole career that
one
I talked.
One time the Tiger got on that cage.
That I talked shit. But one time, yeah. We were playing Syracuse, right? And their quarterback, he ran or whatever, scrambled and some shit, and ran like 4 or 5 yards, and he slid and he landed like right in front of me, and I like kind of just fell into him. I just make sure he was down on the ground. Yeah. The running back comes over and like kind of just like shoves me out of the way and is like, "Hey man, stay off my quarterback." Looked him in his eyes and just went, "Yeah, fuck you."